The one thing that comes to my mind is the fact that democracy is very fragile. And so we've all been looking towards the West as the pioneers of democracy. But when we see what is happening, the level of impunity, the disregard for law.
Can economies sustainably develop if they are mainly relying on aid?
We have become beggars as a continent. Increasingly, the guests we have allowed into our countries have taken over.
Do you think Africa believes that it has agency?
I see the agency as having been taken away from us, but I have hope. It's going to take us time to actually claim that agency back.
Welcome to the Mandela Rhodes Foundation podcast. Under the auspices of our founding patron, Nelson Mandela's dream to build exceptional leadership capacity in Africa, we invite listeners to journey together with us as they hear intimate, behind-the-scenes stories that helped shape the journeys of remarkable African leaders and people on the rise. The Mandela Rhodes Foundation podcast is a platform for authentic and personal narratives of what it truly takes to rise to leadership with a uniquely African lens across a range of topics.
So, Dr. Nanziri, it's really wonderful to have you today, and I've been looking forward to this conversation, you know. I think, you know, as someone who sits in the sort of positionality that you do, having worked across the continent and globally for some very interesting global development companies, I think that it's really going to be quite exciting to tap into your brain a little bit to hear about how you're thinking about things. So as a director for the Africa Center for Development Finance and a senior lecturer at Stellenbosch Business School, what do you make of the current global polarizing shifts, you know, between the West and the rest of the world? And how do you see Africa's role in it?
Oh, thank you, Judy. The pleasure is mine to be here with you and having this conversation. And I'm glad you ask. From where I'm sitting, there are two perspectives to this scenario. So the first one is going to be on leadership, and the other is going to be on policy. And with leadership, I'm talking about issues around democracy. As a lecturer of public policy and leadership, I am actually looking at what is happening to the American experiment, the democratic experiment. The one thing that comes to my mind is the fact that democracy is very fragile. It has to be protected. And we are actually witnessing, a setting that perhaps happened in our respective countries on the continent before we were even born. Because at some point, there was some democracy. Well, maybe a semblance of it. And so we've all been looking towards the West as the pioneers of democracy.
I'm quite curious about, I guess, what is the question around agency that Africa is being asked in this context, you know? So to your point, there's been this dynamic of aid from the West to Africa. But, you know, as someone who sort of has some experience and knowledge about how economies develop, can economies sustainably develop if they are mainly relying on aid? And so this very interesting question about, but how is Africa thinking about its agency? And do you think the agreements that we have had before and the agreements that we need to make now make us believe that we have agency?
What does Africa have and what has it been told that they have? And in those two words, I think we all agree that Africa has been labeled for a long time as a dark continent. I don't think that is correct. And many of us are believing, you know, are beginning to think that actually we are not the dark continent. If we were dark, then why would everybody want to come to Africa? Okay. So it is what we have been meant to believe. And that has shaped our ideas and our perceptions of life. That instead of acknowledging, appreciating what we have and making good use of it in a manner that makes us sustaining and even have that agency, we've actually been told that no, you don't have, you don't know, we know better, and so we will guide you. Yeah, we will guide you on how to get better. I know we might need some guidance here and there to improve, but we have slowly been moved away or into believing that we don't have power. Mm-hmm. And then increasingly the guests we have allowed into our homes, into our countries, have taken over. And before we know it, we are thinking the way they want us to think while they are busy cleaning our homes. And by the time they are done, before we know it, we are left with an empty home. And with an empty home, you soon become a beggar. Mm-hmm. And I think that is the challenge we have. We have become beggars as a continent. We're relying on aid. Oh, we can't do this. Oh, we can't do the other. Why not?
When you use the words you use, like if someone at the deep level believes in a victim mentality, I'm just pushing, I'm trying to understand because, you know, how are we going to shift to saying we have agency? Because the thing is, if you don't have agency, then what do you have? So if you're begging, right? Mm. Are you a victim if you're begging? I'm being provocative. Are you being a victim if you're begging? Or can one say, well, you can't speak so glibly about Africans being beggars because the systemic structures of what the effects of colonialism left on the continent is that to some extent, it's going to take multiple generations to uncover that. But then another argument can be made to say, but actually, how did the African leaders step into those new democracies and think about how to run institutions in a way that speaks to that agency, you know? So I think there's something there for me about, on the one hand, can one be understanding of why we would see African countries being in a begging position, but then on the other hand, what were the failures of the liberation movement leaders who stepped on board and then perpetuated the system where we then needed to beg, quote unquote?
There is a theory. Allow me to go into a little bit of that. There's a theory by Amartya Sen. There is a capability theory. Each individual has two perspectives. You got the ability, your inner ability to do something, but you also need the environment. So I can be capable of doing something. And that is what we get when we go for education, get skilled. I am creating my ability to do ABCD, take up any field, including being a good leader. I am getting that skill. But I need the right environment, and that is where that leadership comes in. So no matter how good I might be as a person, without having the right environment, I'm probably going to be less successful. And the leaders that we've had over the years, and by the way, we see so many of them coming in eager to make change, to see us prosper as nations. But you never cease to ask yourself why all of a sudden or some years down the road they change. Because there's a constant force behind them out there that tries to hold their hands tight.
All right. So that leads us nicely to sort of a thought I've been having about, we obviously have these limited resources. You know, if we look at the continent, as you said,
no, we don't have limited resources.
Well, I think you're right. There is a perception that we have limited resources. But yet when you look at the continent and you look at the strength that different countries have in terms of resources, is then the question about we don't know how to leverage the resources that we have. So I guess there's this question about this push towards the SDGs and, you know, what are those high leverage or multiplier goals that can really help push and accelerate our ability to develop, you know? Because again, the question is, are we lacking the resources or do we believe we have the resources, but it's how we leverage them?
So let's start with the resources. We categorize resources into about three. You have the natural resources. No one has more than we do. Then we have financial resources. That is where the challenge is. And capacity, skills. That is where we're lacking. So the natural resources would have helped us to get the financial resources. But what is happening there? Illicit financial flows. How do they happen? Our natural resources are sold off. So usually it would be trade and we get resource rent. Natural resource rent. That's resource revenue. So what happens? The resources are sent out. The minerals are sent out. An invoice is prepared. We have sent out, for instance, $500 billion worth of minerals. Why do we get $200 billion worth? There's invoice mismatching.
Mm.
So someone is sitting in our own countries and working with another person in the recipient country, in our partner, a trading partner country. And they will create two invoices. A lesser invoice, which is recorded in the national accounts. The difference, which is the $3 billion, is going to be shared, or $300 billion rather, is going to be shared between that party and the African party. It takes two to tango. There's a good paper, a good work done by Professor Leonce Nikumana and Professor Ayogu. These are friends of mine in the U.S., they, plus a third professor, they've taken that study to different countries, checking what is happening. How is Africa losing its resources? So someone is sharing out. And in the end, a particular country gets back just $200 billion worth of revenue. The $300 is shared between this leader here and other parties. And that continues. Africa is being robbed. So you have the minerals, but we don't get the right amount of resource revenue out of them. That now compromises our financial resources. And in the end, because you're getting less, almost compared to your developmental needs, you start getting budget deficits when actually you shouldn't.
Somebody is wanting to eat somewhere.
Of course.
There.
Yeah.
I'd love to hear your views around this question of, we are not able to get to the SDGs because we are lacking the inner capacities required to take us there, right? So we already have the tools and the knowledge to tackle the global challenges, but at the same time, we're not moving as quickly as we are. So there's this movement that's been developing over the past few years, sort of speaking to the inner development goals, which are meant to be paired up and couple the effective sort of realization of the SDGs. So some of the things that they speak about in terms of these inner capacities is self-awareness, compassion, the ability to collaborate across divides. And, you know, for us at the foundation, we really do in our leadership program try to place a lot of importance on that inner work. So I'm very curious, from your perspective, how important is the consideration of really providing that type of leadership training to those people who are in the positions that are trying to drive SDGs? And do you think that if we were to able to, it speaks to your point about the capacity, really, if we can help the leaders that are currently in those positions of influence get more of the strength of the inner development goals, that we'll be able to see a more fast-tracked changes on the continent?
So thinking about the three, at least, elements that you're pointing out, self-awareness and this collaboration and compassion, I think we do have a platform or platforms where we can learn more. Most importantly is collaboration. We should learn to benefit from the diversity. This diversity brings along diversity of ideas. If you know what happened in the Arab Springs, if you heard about it, so like in the early, 2010s, 11s, thereabouts, the collaboration around those countries, the Arab countries that led to the toppling of the leaders there, is something that we can all work around. You will find that those youths share something in common with youths in other parts of the continent. You know, so the challenges will be the same. In fact, if you get into the challenges of the youths, they're going to be similar across the continent. So how about we learn to cooperate, to collaborate, and using this diversity of approaches, diversity of skills. Okay, no, this is how we did it, or we can actually do this and the other. So we do have the tools that can help us to collaborate, to work together towards a common goal, a common good. The good now is freedom, betterment, a better tomorrow for especially the youngsters. So self-awareness, what do I know? It's not that we don't know anything. We have some strengths. One, we need to identify what are our strengths as the youths or as the citizens of this continent. And then by working together, reaching out partnerships with youth somewhere else or citizens of the continent, we can start leveraging each other's strength towards a common good. We should learn this collectivism. This is something similar to Hofstede's scholars. Hofstede has these cultural dimensions. There's mm-hmm. something called individualism and collectivism. United we stand. If you want to go further, you go as a group. Of course, if you want to go faster, you run alone. Mm-hmm. But that's not sustainable. So running alone has not helped us. And that is what the divide and rule did to us as a continent. I think now is the time for us to get together, collectivism. Then we'll start realizing, okay, what we are strong at. You might not realize what you're strong at until you meet others. Mm. And as you engage, so say, oh, wait a minute, you actually can speak well. Mm. Oh, actually, you can write better. Or you can rally and mobilize people better. I believe that that collaboration is what is going to move us forward. We need to get away from this individualism. Mm. It's not helping us. So that is the only way I can link these inner development goals to realizing the sustainable development.
Love it, love it, love it. So, Dr. Nanziri, you are a development finance expert, and I think it would be interesting in this conversation just to give us a 101. What exactly is development finance, and why is it a critical tool for advancing Africa's growth and helping us towards achieving these SDGs?
There are usually, traditionally, two types of financing strategies. Either it is your government, which is what we call public financing, or it is the private sector, which is your banks. Okay. Now, there are also two other concepts. The one is going to be risk, and the other is going to be returns or cost recovery. So governments will, because they're normally developmental in nature, they're looking out for not only the well-to-do, but the ordinary person on the street. So they will usually go for projects that are risky or that are social in nature, but that do not necessarily have returns. So social welfare support. Every government does that, not only ours. So if we're giving social grants, what is the return on that? None, maybe, but we are saying that we're going to have a healthy population. Think about it. If you have hunger in the country, then you don't have manpower. So that is the one side. So on the other hand, we have private sector, maybe the commercial banks, for that matter, private finance. Now, these institutions are interested in projects that are less risky, low risk, but that have a high cost recovery rate. So when they're giving you a loan, they want to see when they're going to get their money back. So it turns out that in the middle, between those two extremes, is a group that is not taken care of. So you're not too poor to get, for instance, social grants, but you're also not too rich. You know, you don't have enough collateral to get, for instance, private credit if you're a business, if you're an SME. Okay, that's the first thing. The other is going to be projects like infrastructure. We need infrastructure, which needs a lot of funding. But government is a very poor saver, very inefficient in managing resources. So we have a road that needs to be built. We have a hospital that needs to be built, a school, and so on. That is where development finance works. So in that space of debt finance, we usually have public-private partnerships, project financing, infrastructure financing, export-related financing, trade financing, environmental financing, climate financing. So very, very targeted. And as I say all of those, you can quickly link them back to various SDGs.
Where did this all begin? We want to know a little bit more about young Elizabeth. You know, tell us where you grew up and maybe one key thing that you can sort of point to that led you in the direction of, you know, economics and then eventually development finance.
So I grew up in Anglophone Africa, colonized by the English. Now, as I grew up, majority of the parents there in some in those countries were thinking about natural sciences. My parents wanted me to be a doctor, a medical doctor. And I must say, I put my whole heart into being a medical doctor, as in being the subjects that would take me there, that is physics, chemistry, biology. On the other hand, I am a natural mathematician, taking after my mother. So I pursued what my parents wanted me to do. And unfortunately, I missed going to the medical school by 0.5 points. That was very painful. At that time, they used to rank. So before you sit your final, for your final exams, you make a selection of the courses that you want to do best on the subjects that you have pursued. Fast forward, I then had an opportunity to go back and complete my studies. I then decided to do the one thing that came naturally to me, which was mathematics. So I looked for a subject, a program that had maybe economics or at least maths, but I couldn't go for just a BSc in mathematics. That didn't make sense to me. So I went for economics. I went into private sector to start with as a CEO of the Savings Institute in South Africa. I was doing well, but I wasn't satisfied. I really wanted to aim higher. I went for my PhD in economics at the University of Cape Town in South Africa. And you know what? That PhD started moving me. One, because there were fewer girls doing economics. And today, that has been my mandate. I really want to encourage girls to go in for those subjects. So because of that, I was continuously being invited to places. Very quickly, I went for two visiting scholarships or fellowships in the U.S., Kansas University, then University of Massachusetts. And I was keen. I was interested in studying. That's what everybody knows about me. I love books. I love knowledge. So that is how I got into this journey. So I got a postdoc with the University of Oxford. I continued with the World Bank. So one thing led to another until I decided, no, I think it's time for me to give back to the continent. And I went to Stellenbosch Business School.
Well, thank you for sharing that, because I think it's important to also sort of get a sense of what informs, you know, one's journey. As we wrap up now, any sort of final words of wisdom to offer our current and future young leaders who will be listening in, and especially those wanting to drive sustainable economic change?
I want us to understand that the challenge is huge. That's the first thing. Just like in research, most of the time we say, you're not going to do groundbreaking work. Whatever you have as a research question or research idea, somebody else has had it and has attempted it. So when you come in, you're going to try and address it differently. Try and see if you can get more results. So you kind of building on to what someone is doing. So let's look at, we do have challenges, that's correct. But I want us to minimize on our ambition, because sometimes our ambition drives us crazy and we fail to portray or deliver our messages effectively.
Beautiful, beautiful. Dr. Elizabeth Nanziri, thank you so much. It was amazing being in conversation with you.
Pleasure is mine.
Really, really lovely. And I think you've left us with a lot that we can chew on here. Very important topics in the current context we live in. Thank you for being an inspiring woman leader and for just, I think, yeah, your courage to be able to just say things the way they are. And I've learned a lot from this conversation. So thank you so much.
Thank you for listening to the Mandela Rhodes Foundation podcast. To learn more about the Mandela Rhodes Foundation, visit our website at www.mandelarhodes.org. www.mandelaroads.org. Follow us on Facebook, LinkedIn, and Instagram for more updates. If you enjoyed this episode, be sure to subscribe to the podcast on your platform of choice to be notified of new episodes. This is a Volume Podcast production.